You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Now, if that doesn't get you in the mood to talk sports, I don't know what will. Daniel Pinto Gunderson here, introducing you to the 033 Pinto and White Shadow Show.
I almost dumped myself out of this chair here. What?
How you doing over there, Brad Jones?
I'm okay.
I'm back from Florida. We had
you
a week off hiatus. And again, let's get the particulars out of the way. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at PintoKFGO. If you want to follow Brad Jones, he's
adjusting my chair at the Bison Guy.
Having chair issues as well. Yeah. Facebook, we're on there. Go to KFGO.com, the podcast page. Drop down. You're going to find near the bottom the Pinto and White Shadow Show podcast.
Who do we have to pay off to get moved to the top?
A lot of people.
Oh. Okay.
I think they actually have to pay me more to get to the top. I think that's how it works.
Is that how? Okay.
Yes. And that doesn't. That's not going to happen any day soon.
Oh, okay.
Although I did get rave reviews from Florida.
The entire state of Florida?
No.
Oh.
No, I not so much for my work, just for the fact that I was a little tanner when I came back.
Ah.
And they said, hey, you look a little better, which being a guy who's in radio professionally, it's I have a face for radio.
Yeah.
As the old standard joke goes.
Yeah. I go the other way. I look tanner in the winter just because there's a lot of snow around, and that's about the only thing that can make me look a little
darker.
Man,
you get lost in the winter just because you walk outside. Brad, where'd you go? Where'd he go? He's so white.
It is.
He's so white.
It's factually correct.
That's why they call him the White Shadow. You can comment on the KFGO.com podcast page underneath where we post our podcast. Comment Marcus from Mayville. He's commented again. We also have our own email address. We're big time here. Pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. Tyler from Tennessee, but he's really from Kentucky.
Who cares? He's Tyler from Tennessee.
He has sent in an email as well to us. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Also, iTunes. We're on iTunes if you want to get to us there. Pinto and White Shadow Show. Subscribe to us. Follow us. We usually put one of these things up every Monday or Tuesday whenever we get to them. Today, it'll be a Monday night sesh. We should just call him sesh.
Sesh.
Okay. Podcast sesh right now. Brad Jones and I talking, boy, a lot of things sports. We have a lot of things to get to, and I'm looking at Tyler. Do you want to get to the mailbag first? Mailbag issue question from Tyler from Tennessee. First, you want to do comments and that stuff at the end. And a lot of this stuff has to do with
where does Tyler's fit in best? Well, I have no idea. You're hitting me blind with it.
Title of his email is College Athletics Pay for Play.
Let's save that.
Okay. And Marcus from Mayville is, well, it's going back to the parents' issues and back to the high school stuff.
We can read it. We've hammered that 2 weeks, the last two
podcasts.
Let's
get that out. Let's get that out of the way right away, because we have gone after a two podcast. Marcus writes, Pinto, I think the biggest factor in you guys talking about kids not wanting to play is the parents across the board keeping our interest in sports. I think almost all my teammates' dads have coached me at some point growing up. Parents would take turns, bring us to the gym, watching us when we were no good up until we learned the game and could go on our own. Parents these days are not willing to help out everyone involved. You have parents willing to shell out money for the kids to go to camps, play AAU ball, ECI ball, but there isn't that community effort to keep kids interested in sports, make it ready and available for them to practice. It's easier to make an excuse than make something happen these days.
Okay.
It's a good point.
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of one of those things now. We're too busy for you. Let's make it somebody else's
maybe
problem.
And, you know, and I said on our last podcast, like I said, we're not diving into this. I promise. Just real quickly, though, I did call my former superintendent to talk about and you were right. I mean, he said, you know, previous years I'd have 100 and some kids in grades 9 through 12. He said, now I've got 50 or 60. I used to get, you know, I get 15% participation. That meant I could put together, you know, a 15-man team. Now I get 15% participation and I've got to go to other schools to get it.
Right.
So, I mean, that was a big factor. There were certainly some others, but he said, yeah, numbers is the biggest thing. And he said, then once that happens, then you get into the traveling to practices and all that stuff, the things that we talked about last
time. Yeah,
so,
and it just becomes,
so you were right. That first domino was just straight numbers.
What?
Yeah.
I was right?
You were right.
Oh, my goodness. Hang on. Yeah, I had to do it for
there
myself.
You go.
So that it's just pretty much going to end our discussion on where we're at. That's kind of died down as far as the talk of, you know, parents and how much they interfere or, you know, push and prod at local sports, high school sports, so on and so forth. So we'll move on from that and we'll get into
local.
And locally, of course, NDSU basketball is on the docket. Now, what we're going to open with is the NDSU women's basketball team and the announcement that head coach for the women's basketball team, Carolyn Dioff, will resign at the end of the season. I think April 15th is when she's officially
done. I believe that's correct.
Done.
Yes.
No big surprise here, really.
No, and, you know, it's her resignation, but I think it was probably mutual. I mean, it was just a mutual. I can't imagine she was having a whole lot of fun these last few years, and the program wasn't performing.
You know, one of the things that she mentioned in her resignation was the, what was it, the social media aspect of it, which I was very like, what?
Okay, and let me clarify that, because I had the chance to visit with Lynn Dorn a little bit, she actually made an appearance on another local radio show and clarified that up a little bit. And talked about how it wasn't so much that people were attacking the players, which I think is how it was initially construed, but the players were just seeing a lot of the things on social media, some of it that was said about Coach Dioff, and some of it that was just said that was, you know, how poorly the team was doing and just pointing some of that out, and that it was getting to them a little bit. So,
okay.
I'm just clarifying.
No, I understand. I understand that,
so,
but if you can't handle fact, record overall in the last few years, overall at NDSU, not great.
No.
You look at what she's done in the Summit League, nothing. And this year has just been despicable. 6-23 overall, 2-12 in the conference. They've had multiple long losing streaks within the conference. I mean, it just hasn't been good for NDSU women's basketball the last few years. And I don't think it was so much, I'll say Coach Dioff hasn't done a good job of bringing it back to where it was, but you could see that gradual downward spiral with this team, even as Amy Rulli was kind of coming in as the D1 coach and then going, all right, here it's Coach Dioff's turn. They have essentially expected Dioff to come in and revitalize the program, and it's just complete 180 from that.
You know, I defended her early on because the most dangerous thing on the NDSU campus to be was the ACL of a women's basketball player for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Injury
mean, they were
prone,
just,
everything,
and,
right.
And that was the first few years, but recently, the last couple of years, you can only ride that reason for so long. And they've been healthy, and they don't have the players, which is interesting because one of her big strengths was recruiting. I mean, that's one of the things that they talked a lot about coming in, and she just didn't.
She hasn't recognized talent. I mean, she hasn't. And
here's the thing, and I don't know, and that's the thing we don't know. We don't know if it's not recognizing talent or not being able to get it, and we don't know which one it is.
Well,
I mean, we don't know if the players that she got were choices 1, 2, 3 on your list of 1 through 25, or if 1, 2, 3 turned her down and she ended up down at, you know, 16, 17, 18. I mean, but the players, and a lot of good players, but not enough quality to run with South Dakota State. And, I mean, that's the standard that this program is going to be held to.
Well, you know, from what I've heard, it was players that other programs, not so much the South Dakota States and UNDs were looking at, but it was Minot States, University of Mary schools are going, oh, okay, so NDSU is going to go after them. That was the kind of player she was going after. From what I've been told and from what I've kind of done from, you know, going through and talking with people that I know, that was what they said. Now, whether or not that's how it went or it just, like you said, just kind of fell in their lap, well, now this is where we have to go with it. You never are going to know because they're going to play it off as they were where we wanted them. We wanted to get that player.
Exactly.
They're never going to tell you that player was not somebody we wanted and we had to take them because we needed to fill a roster spot. It's hearsay, I understand, but it's tough to go against the hearsay when the results on the floor have been, like I said, this year, especially 6-23. And playing against South Dakota State has been a nightmare.
Yeah.
And that's your biggest rival. Not only that, when you have to deal with the comparisons, you're sandwiched in between two pretty successful women's basketball programs at the moment. University of North Dakota up in Grand Forks is doing a very good job. And then South Dakota State's doing a tremendous job.
Yep.
South Dakota State University down there. And then you've got this program that's struggling.
And on top of that, you're following Amy Ruley.
Yeah. And I mean, that's tough. But there's some separation there because she was Division II and you're Division I. And that's how I think of it.
I don't think that's how a lot of people think of it. I mean, she came after the greatest coach in the history of NDSU, probably. I mean, she'd probably be up there. It'd be her.
Craig Bohl.
I mean, Bohl.
I mean, if you went
across sports, I mean, this may be an interesting topic for a different show that we stumbled upon.
Right.
But, you know, Craig Bohl, Bucky Maughan.
Amy Rowley, absolutely. There's no other way to
Ryan
put it.
Ryan Godfrey is quickly coming on that list. Yeah. Don Larson has been here for a long time with the track program.
Yep, and that's up there too because you look at what the NDSU track program has done.
The women's have won every championship since they've been in the conference.
Yep, seven straight now.
Seven straight indoor, six straight outdoor. Everyone.
Yep, that's unbelievable. Yes. And Roger Kish, what he's doing, I mean, they're not obviously to that point, but Amy Ruley is definitely forefront when it comes to great coaches.
Yeah.
And to follow that's tough.
Yep.
But there is that separation between D2 and D1, I think, in some people's minds.
Yeah.
But again, let go or she's going to walk away. And now for this NDSU women's team, it's not so much it's just a total rebuilding situation. Now, what benefits them and the next coach that comes in, and I would assume that Lynn Dorn is the women's athletic director is going to open up a national search.
That's kind of what she said, yeah.
And what you get to do is you go,
new building. And yep. I'm going to say that over and over and over again to every coaching candidate that I want.
You don't have to coach in the BSA anymore. You don't have to look at that. You can come in and go, all right, I don't have to follow Amy Ruley like you said. I get to follow Carolyn Dioff, which is a little bit easier.
Yep.
And from there, you can kind of do what you want. And really, the expectations are so low that if you have a 500 season off the bat, you're going, oh, okay, this coach has something going for. You know, so we'll see.
And here's the thing, and I want to say I like Coach Dioff. I've gotten the chance to get to know her. The first interview I ever did with her, I was still the sports editor at the Spectrum. And she called me I got a chance to talk to her a day or two after she'd been hired, and she was in an airport in North Carolina, I believe, out doing some recruiting and took the time to visit with me and has been wonderful.
Great person, yeah.
Every minute since. So, I think there's people who have taken her as far as not appreciating her personality, and she's, if you get a chance to talk to her, she's a wonderful, wonderful person. I don't know if maybe head coaching is where her strengths are. She knows basketball, but I think she might be a better fit as a top assistant, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, and when to come this far and get into a program that honestly when you pick it up and go, okay, I can work with something here. I'm not coming to bare bones. It's a great person. I wish the best for her career, obviously, like I would with any coach, but the reality is she couldn't get it done here at North Dakota State. They had to move on. She just wasn't a good coach at NDSU. Yeah. Whether it was schematically or whatever the schemes they were working with or just the talent that she was bringing in.
It wasn't the right fit. Yep.
Was not the right fit.
Yep.
So NDSU, the women's basketball team, they enter as the seventh seed. There's only seven seeds in the Summit League tournament. They play Saturday early, 2 p.m. You can hear that game on 790 KFGO. And I just don't expect them to do anything against IUPUI, a team they lost to twice, and they lost to them twice big. Looking at the scores, 71-46 at the BSA and then 77-53 in Indianapolis. They'll get an early exit from the tournament, and that'll kind of be the end of the season, the end of Coach Dioff. On the other side of it, though, we've got a really good men's basketball team.
Yes, we do.
The North Dakota State men's basketball team finished up the regular season with a 23-6 overall record, 12-2 in the conference, a seven-game winning streak to end the year, 12-1 at home, 10-5 away from the BSA, 78-68 victory over Denver. And why that is significant for this NDSU men's basketball team, they could play Denver in the second round, since they have a first-round bye.
Yep, play Monday at 6.
Of the Summit League tournament, whether it's South Dakota or Denver, no big deal. We're going to get into that later because we anticipate doing another podcast.
We'll figure out a time to do next week. I got some travel and some scheduling issues, but we're going to figure out a time to get this done next
week. And I think
most
likely we're going to do it before NDSU plays their game on Monday. We're going to try to work that out.
Yeah.
So with that being the case, we're not going to get into it too much yet. We'll do that before the game, right before, to give you kind of some fresh outlook on it. But otherwise, what impressed you the most with NDSU from start to finish with their team?
Oh, you hit me blind with these big
questions.
I'm
coming at you
again.
Blind
you
all
are.
Day.
I know.
All night. And I like
what
this chair
because
it has arms and it makes me feel comfortable.
I'm really tall here. This chair is really
high up.
I feel
like you're on a stool.
I kind of
you have another
like
chair available to you. Why don't you just take that?
It
seems
like
a normal height.
It seems like a lot of work. I keep pressing the lever thinking one of these times it's going to go down, but
it's not going to go
It's down. Not going to happen. That lever works. That almost dumped me out of the chair again.
You're going to kill yourself before we finish this thing.
Do I have insurance along with my zero pay for this?
No.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah, we have great coverage, just no pay. Yeah. Right.
All right, so the thing that impressed me the most, I think it's probably just the defensive consistency, which is not exciting. It's not, it's just not. But I think that was probably my favorite part of this team. They were just consistently good from start to finish on the defensive side of the ball. Most recently, the last few games that I've watched, I think what's really impressed me is the fact that this team is winning games without Taylor Braun having to take over.
Right.
I mean, they did it against Denver. He did it against IPFW. He wasn't a factor in the game. He didn't have any points in the first half of the Denver game, I don't believe. Maybe two.
A couple, but not a lot.
I mean, it was – and the team was great. Jordan Aaberg has been fun to watch over the last couple of weeks here. And it's been fun to watch this team. But yeah, I'd say probably the defensive consistency and seeing Jordan Aaberg healthy were probably two of my favorite things.
Taylor Braun's going to end up in the top 15 in points all time at NDSU,
yep,
and rebounds all time at NDSU,
yep,
and assists.
Yep.
And that's this thing with this team that is so amazing to watch and is almost so annoying that it gets ignored is that this team has better all-around players than the 08-09 team did. When you think about, let me take that back, not better all-around players, better players for their position than the 08-09 team did. Lucas Mormon, he was all right for a center, but Marshall Bjorklund, who was a better post player.
Okay, let's
you want to go person by person here.
Position by position.
Position
here.
By
okay.
position.
So are you taking Ben Woodside or Lawrence Alexander?
Well, I'm taking Ben Woodside.
Okay. Are you taking, let's see, are you taking Mike Nelson or are you taking Corey Brown?
And honestly, to me, that's a good question.
Don't do this.
I know. But
don't do this.
But
come on.
Corey Brown, the problem is there. The problem is Corey Brown is only a sophomore and Mike Nelson is senior.
The problem is Corey Brown can't shoot. He did. I mean, he's been great around the basket.
Yes, it
has. That boy
has,
can't shoot.
No. And Mike Nelson could shoot.
And Mike Nelson drew the toughest perimeter defender every night,
and
he was really good.
So does Brown.
Yes, but Nelson also scored 1,000 points.
That's true. All right, Mike Nelson.
Yeah, I mean, you wanted to, and Corey Brown's important. Don't get me wrong. He's been another fun one to watch this year, where it's gotten to the point where I don't cringe every time he gets the ball anymore.
Right. And so now we go to a small forward, which it's Michael Tweet or Taylor Braun.
No. Well, depends on who you want to put there.
I think Winkleman was more of a power forward.
You think Winkleman was more of the
yes.
four? Yeah, okay.
I would go Braun.
Braun over Tweet? Absolutely.
Yes.
I don't think there's a question there.
Tweet was a great scorer, but really couldn't do much else.
Trayvon Wright or Brett Winkleman?
Again.
Come on.
That's tough.
Brett Winkleman's the second best player, I believe. In my opinion, he's the second best player in NDSU history.
I would argue that after this. But I think he's top five.
Okay.
But my thing with Trayvon Wright is what he brings to you everywhere else. Winkleman could score. There's no doubt about it. And he could rebound. But then again, when you have a 7-foot guy on your team, you shouldn't have to rebound as prolifically as he did.
But Winkleman was so smart, and he could beat you in so many ways. He could post up.
Yeah.
He could shoot from the outside. He's the second all-time scorer in Bison history.
And Trayvon Wright changes the game's momentum more than Winkleman could, with not only his dunks, but with his defense. And if every other night Trayvon Wright is scoring a couple baskets, because that's just an added bonus when his offense happens. And
you're not going to convince.
I'm not going to convince. I'm not going to convince you.
You shouldn't even be trying to tell me that Trayvon Wright's better than Brett Winkleman.
I'm not trying to tell you. I'm not telling you that he's better.
Okay.
But if I'm building a team, if I'm looking at this, the all-around player, better. All around. I'm not talking at one facet. I would take Trayvon Wright.
But you're wrong, because Brett Winkleman was a better rebounder.
Trayvon Wright's a better shot blocker, defender.
A better defender?
Yes.
A better shot blocker?
Better
yes.
defender.
Better
defender because of his length and because of his athleticism. Yes.
I wouldn't go that far. Brett Winkleman was a very, very good defensive player.
He wasn't bad. I think Trayvon Wright is better.
He wasn't bad. Again.
And the factor that I think plays into a lot of the mind games and stuff, when you can just change the game momentum-wise with the way you throw down a dunk. And I know people look at that and go, well, it's just 2 points. Yeah, it's 2 points. But if you're in the middle of a run and it gets exclamated with exclamation, if there's an exclamation point in there with a dunk.
An exclamation point?
An exclamation point. Oh, my goodness.
If you ask Saul Phillips to say who's a better,
I picked the wrong week.
if you would ask Saul Phillips who's a better player, Trayvon Wright or Brett Winkleman, he would laugh you out of the building.
But
if
you're
you
not
said
asking Saul, you're asking me, and I'm making the case for Trayvon Wright.
You can make that case, but you're just flat wrong. I mean, you can say dunks and blocks, I'll give you Trayvon, but Trayvon at times would disappear on the offensive side of the game. Brett Winkleman is the second leading scorer in school history.
That's true.
And a better rebounder. You're looking at two huge facets. He out-rebounds Trayvon Wright. Trayvon is way more athletic. Trayvon Wright should out-rebound Brett Winkleman, and he didn't.
Right, but he didn't have to. Again, when you look at the concept of the team overall, you look at the NDSU 08-09 team, they had one rebounder. They had one guy who could rebound, Brett Winkleman. Lucas Mormon, who I wouldn't take over Marshall Bjorklund,
no.
by the way.
No.
We can both agree on that.
Yeah.
So we'll end that argument back to this. Lucas Mormon was just a body to be out there. I mean, he didn't do much for this team.
No, that's true.
And I'll go to these stats, and you look at them. Woodside averaged 23.2 a game. Winkleman was at 18.6. Nelson was at 11.6. Lucas Mormon was 7 feet tall.
He was 6'10".
Whatever. Sorry about 2 inches
well,
there.
That's a difference.
4 rebounds a game. Mike Nelson, who was a guard, had a better rebound average per game than your center. It's not good. When you don't have the balance of a guy who can rebound. Taylor Braun leads this team in rebounding at 5 a game or whatever it is. It's not a huge number. But when your guard can lead the team in rebounding, plus he's got other guys like Marshall Bjorklund and Jordan Auberg and Trayvon Wright who can rebound for him. I mean, you look at the rebounds, the way it balances out. Trayvon Wright averages 5.1 a game, which is second on the team. I'm telling you, when you look at the overall play of a guy, you can't just pigeonhole and go, well, he can just score. Yeah, sure.
He can't.
But Mike Nelson could score. And Ben Woodside can score. Trayvon Wright, to me, is a guy I would take over Winkleman. I get the 18.5 and I get the 7.5 per game. And the fact that he was on a team with Ben Woodside and still was able to score as many points as he could. To me, I would take Trayvon Wright at the power forward or small forward,
here's the thing, you
pick him at.
Trayvon will disappear in some games, and Winkleman never disappeared. He may not have been as flashy, although Winkleman was the most athletic player on that team. Maybe Zoe Riley, but Winkleman was insanely athletic. When they did the dunk contest, he was fun to watch.
But you're saying it disappears, and you're making that seem like he disappears entirely. He doesn't disappear defensively.
And neither did Winkleman. You're completely underselling his... You're focusing on a couple of flash plays. And yes, they're important, but with the consistency that Winkleman brought, and I mean, the fact that, you know, you're taking a... You know, you're looking at an 18-point-a-game player versus a 10-point-a-game player. You know, 10 to 12 is what... with Trayvon. And the field goal percentage. I mean, Winkleman was... You're just completely short-selling Winkleman, and I hope anybody out there...
I'm not short-selling Winkleman.
If you're taking Trayvon Wright over Brett Winkleman, you are short-selling Winkleman. Because there's...
Winkleman will come off the bench.
No.
Can I put Trayvon on the bench and then have Winkleman start? Because who's going to be the sixth man on this team? I'm not taking Mike Felt.
sixth man on this team? Well, I guess we'd probably have L.A. as probably the sixth man on the team.
Yeah, there's L.A. too.
But yeah.
There's just so many things about Trayvon's game that I think it underappreciated, and I think that
I think there's things that get overappreciated about Trayvon. His two dunks a game, and he's 1.8 blocks. You know who else averaged 1.8 blocks?
Who's that?
Lucas Moorman. And let's see, what is this? Oh, these are single season. But Moorman, yeah, averaged 1.8 blocks. Same thing that Trayvon averaged last year in one of his seasons.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
I still would take Trayvon.
I mean, that's just so ridiculously insane.
I think there's an argument to be made as to why, and I feel like I have a better argument.
You feel like you have a better argument when you're arguing against the guy who, when you're arguing against the third best, you're arguing for the third best player on this team, and you're arguing that over a guy who's widely considered at worst top five and probably the second best player in Bison history.
Yeah.
If you think that somehow,
I still would take Trayvon just based off the fact that we're making a team here.
No, we're looking at position by position.
And who would be better?
Yes.
Better fitted? I still think...
Better fit, my gosh. You qualify this however you want. Brett Winkleman is a better player than Trayvon Wright, and that's
fact. But I just feel that I would rather have Trayvon Wright at my four.
You would rather have a worse player.
He's not a worse player
that's,
in my mind.
That's what you just said.
No, I'm not. I'm saying Brett Winkleman is the better player overall, but at the four position, I'd rather have Trayvon.
So Brett Winkleman's a better player, but I'd rather have a different guy. Okay. I'm pretty sure that's you just saying I would rather
have
the worst player.
I can't have Winkleman at the three, can I?
I would see. I almost consider Winkleman a three more than Tweet. I would put Winkleman at the three.
Okay, so let's take it from this standpoint, because a lot of these people can transition and go from. We're not getting rid of Woodside. We're not getting rid of Bjorklund.
Bjorklund.
Those
yes.
are our five and our one. No problem. Okay.
And our two is
Nelson.
So the three and four. Let's take two players out of Winkleman, Braun, Trayvon Wright, and Michael Tweet. So if we're taking two of those four for our three and four positions.
And see, it's tough. Because I if you give me Winkleman at the three, I'd still want Braun, but I can't put Braun at the four.
You put Braun and Winkleman at those two positions. Those guys are versatile enough that they can handle it.
I feel for a four that Trayvon Wright is a better four than Winkleman. I think Winkleman's a better small forward because he can offensively. To me, the positions differ so greatly. When I'm looking at a four, I'm not looking for a guy who can drop 18 or 22 at the drop. I'm just looking for a guy who
I'm not looking for the guy who can score.
Because I want him at the small forward position.
I want the best players on the floor. Position, you can figure it out. Villanova was a number one seed with four guards.
Right, I
so
get
I want
it.
The best players on the floor.
But we're going position by position
and
here.
And the best players, but we switched it around and we gave you the options. And even if it's not position by position, and if it's position by position, it doesn't matter. Because Brett Winkleman's a better basketball player and I want him on the floor.
I'd still take Trayvon at the four.
Okay, please tweet at Pinto KFGO and tell him how nuts he is for thinking that Trayvon Wright's a better player than Brett Winkleman. I'll call up Winks. Let me get Winks' wife on the phone. I could call her right now. We'll get Terry on the phone.
Well, that's not even fair.
Of course she's going to side with her husband. Sure it is.
Of course she's going to side with her.
You got to watch Winks for 2 years. I watched Winks for 4 years, and I watched Trayvon for four years now. And I'm telling you, it's not close.
I mean, I wouldn't kick him off the team, obviously. I'd keep him on the roster.
So you're putting Trayvon in the top five players of all time, if that's what you're doing.
I thought we were just comparing team by team. When did it become a top five of all
time?
Because
you put Brett Winkleman in your top five of all time. So you're leaving off a top five player of all time.
But we were going position
by
position. We're going position by position.
But you want
here.
The best basketball players, and regardless of what position. Give me Woodside at the two guard. I don't care.
I would. I don't want him at the two. I want him running the team. I want him running the team. We're going position by position here.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
We went position by position, then you totally went away from it.
But the point is you want the best basketball player.
If we went with the best five, if we went strictly with the best five.
Okay.
Let's just go with that.
Okay.
For some reason we got into this, but if we went with the best five.
Okay.
Woodside, Winkleman, Nelson, Braun, and Bjorklund. That's easy.
Okay.
But if you're going position by position.
So then why would you take somebody over that? You have a chance to make that exact team.
Because you're going
and you're arguing
position.
Against the best
you're
five.
You're going by position by position. And I'm not going technically against the best five. I'm going against the fact that I just want position by position, and I want him at that true position.
Move on. This is ridiculous.
You just can't accept the fact that I want these guys where they're slotted to play, and I think Wickelman is a better three than a four, and I think Wright's a better four than a three. That's how I feel, and I think Braun would be a two. So in that case, I suppose we get Nelson out of there, which I think Braun would
not,
be better
just,
than Nelson.
I'm not even
you're
going.
Not even you're going to engage with me right now?
You're taking off a engage? Player with 1,900 points. And
not necessarily. If we moved him to the three, I'd put Nelson on the bench, and I'd put Braun at the
way,
two.
But either way, if you're arguing...
Coach, Braun's a pretty good defender, too, so he'd still get the perimeter guy. It's a good lineup right there.
I'm done with this. Nope. We got to move on.
I can't handle it anymore.
It's just so asinine that you would pick Trayvon Wright over. It's not like you're taking, you're putting Ben Woodside at center.
No.
I mean, you've got, and Brett Winkleman's about the same height. I mean, Brett Winkleman's 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
He's maybe an inch shorter. He's stronger than Trayvon Wright.
Yeah.
And you're going to take, what, a block or a half a block more a game. And one
blocks,
or two more dunks.
The dunks, the overall defense, yes.
But your overall defense, you're underselling Winkleman's defense completely. Winkleman was way better defender than you're giving him credit for. And plus, he was, in addition to all that, he was one of the smartest. Saul Phillips always says he's the smartest player I ever coached. And all of that matters. And
oh, no, I'm not saying it doesn't, but all I'm saying is that if you're going position by position.
And I'm going position by position, and Brett Winkleman is a better power forward than Trayvon Wright is.
I don't know about that.
Because I do. It's
fact. If you go by traditional playing of the position.
But traditional playing by the position doesn't exist really anymore. Traditional power forward now shoots threes and stretches and does a little bit of everything. And Brett Winkleman did everything other than dunk and block better than Trayvon Wright.
And play defense.
I disagree with that. Blocks, yes, and that part of defense. But if you want to say that, he's better defense, then I can just say, well, Brett's a better offense of player. If you want to just say defense, offense.
So you take Brett, I'll take Trayvon, and then we'll go with those teams. We'll see who wins.
Yep, I'll take that all day.
Anyways, I don't even know what the heck happened there. We got into something that it just completely went away from where we were going, and I'm not lost, but I'm a little bit frazzled. Hang on, I need to gather myself just a little bit here. Just give me a second. Are you good?
I'm good.
I'm good. All right. Anyways, biggest improvement. That was the question that happened. That was what started this whole thing. Are you okay, by the way?
I'm okay, yeah.
You
Brett Winkleman, by the way, led the team in steals his senior year.
That's good for him.
Yeah, it is.
I whatever. I'll stand firm in my position. I'm fine with it. I'd still take Trayvon Wright on
you can,
my team.
You can go ahead and lose on that. That's fine.
I mean, whatever. It's not a popular pick. I get it. But anyways, this team, biggest improvement that you saw, and you said it was
Corey Brown, without question.
Corey Brown,
without
the biggest
question.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's and
been,
he said their overall defense consistency.
That was my favorite thing, most improved thing though. Corey Brown, he's always been a blast to watch on the defensive end. And my brother said it best. He said, you know, if you know that you're playing the Bison and that Corey Brown's going to be guarding you for however long he can stay out of foul trouble, it's going to be a long night because
right.
I mean, it's just not going to be fun.
I think the biggest improvement I saw with this team was from Jordan Auberg.
Yeah. I see, and the only reason I didn't go with Auberg is just because it was more, he's just finally healthy.
Yeah.
And that's a version of improvement. And I mean, I won't go against that. But
then again, you could go, well, he's finally healthy and he just doesn't perform the way that you always wanted him to when they got him out of Rothsay. But he did.
Yeah.
He did everything you asked a backup center to do, along with more.
I mean, think he's done more. Yeah,
I
agree. I
mean, just his scoring consistency is up.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about at the beginning of the year with this team. We thought it was going to come from Carl and Dupree as far as where's the bench scoring going to come from. And it's been Auberg, and it's been fun to watch him.
Yeah, down the stretch for Auberg, it's been pretty good for him, just going from game to game to game. I think he had a 15 or 14 or whatever it was on Saturday night against Denver. I'll check it out here as I pull up his stats. But even so, his improvement, not only has he been the biggest thing that you've seen that I've liked to see from start to finish, but he's also been the biggest improver from start to finish for this team. So you know, they've been fun to watch, and they were the good team, the right team, and one of the better teams to have you watch the BSA go away with. You know,
yeah.
And to me, they don't fit into my top three BSA moments, and I do have a top three. I put it on KFGO.com.
Is the first three when they're getting torn down? When it's getting torn down?
I wish
those
it was.
My first three moments.
Yeah, no, actually, three is Woodside, Winkleman, Nelson, Mormon. That might have been it. Their senior night.
Zoe Riley
too. And then we had 13 on Saturday. Did Auburn? Doesn't matter. Anyways, and then two was tweet Carlson to tweet against UMKC.
Yeah,
the midcourt alley-oop. And the reason that was, too, is because the way it was set up previously, the inbounder got it to tweet, and he called timeout right away at half court.
Yeah, they threw it from full court, half court.
Timeout right away.
It
was
beautiful.
Beautifully drawn up, and it was probably one of those things they practiced a ton. And
it was, yeah.
And they got it right.
I remember, and this just quick top tangents, because apparently that's what we're doing today.
Probably not.
I remember listening to Saul Phillips after the game, and he said, you know, when we tried that play in practice, we had Carlson throw the inbounds and he threw it off the rim. And he said, I went over, yelled at him. I said, Carlson, I'm never going to ever watch you try to throw a lob pass again in my life. And then he had him throw it in the game for whatever reason.
Yeah, perfect.
It beautiful.
It's perfect.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And that was fun. And then the number one for me was a game I actually got to watch as a fan. I didn't have to do anything. It was a Friday night against South Dakota State. Nate Wolters, I believe, was a sophomore at that point. Mm. And they were, you just could tell, South Dakota State was going up, NDSU was going down,
sure.
A little bit of a pendulum swing there. And NDSU just crushed them. It was like 23-3 or 23-4 at one point. You could just see the look on South Dakota State's face going, what is happening here? It was in that midst, too, where NDSU just did not have good teams. I mean, they were playing Nate Sastro at point guard to start as a freshman and as a sophomore.
It's Taylor Braun's first year,
Taylor
I
Braun's
believe.
First
yeah.
year, yes, but you could just kind of tell that this team was like, oh boy, they're really kind of scratching to get by to get these other guys in, and they just absolutely dominated them. I think towards the end of the game, with the end of the first half, like the last minute, Freddie Coleman had an alley-oop dunk that he threw down, and Eric Carlson had one as well, and just the way the BSA was rocking, and just it was an overall atmosphere type of game where I'm going, the BSA had its moments for me, and that was
sure.
top moment.
And all of our moments are going to be 2004 and after. So
yeah,
just be, I mean, so
the women's
for,
basketball
I was
say,
side for 100%, all apologies to Amy Ruley's 1990s team because we just were young.
We weren't around
we
for
weren't
those
there.
Things.
And those would probably be the top three moments on the list if you know had we been. To
no,
see
you
those.
Were around for Kansas State.
That was going to be one of the ones that I was going to mention because I was in the student section for that game, and there has never been a more fun crowd for basketball that I've been a part of or that I've seen. I mean, even for as good a crowd as we have for football, our student section just not quite as educated on basketball, being a student section at a basketball game. And they try to bring good energy, but it's just not quite as sophisticated as what we have for football. But I tell you what, that night they were on. Bob Huggins was complaining about the crowd after the game in the press conference. And for Bob Huggins at Kansas State, and who had been, who had had some phenomenal teams at Cincinnati, to complain about the crowd at little old NDSU, I thought that was saying something. And they were, there were chants of 2, 4, 6, 8, Bobby's kids don't graduate. There was a lot of DUI chants as he'd been coming off of one of those. I mean, it was some creative and entertaining stuff. And the way the game ended, I mean, it was a great game. And Woodside, there was contact on a last second heave for three that would have won the game. And and there was no call, so it ended a little controversy. But the game was brilliant. Just a fun, fun, fun basketball game. So that's up there. My freshman year, I got to see Katie Lorenz hit a buzzer beater in the 04-05 against South Dakota State. That was a really neat moment to see. And as far as, probably that lobbed a tweet. I mean, that's the other moment that kind of jumps out at you.
Yep.
And honestly, for road team, maybe George Hill, he threw down a dunk coming down the middle. That was a little eye opening for some people to see that kind of athleticism.
Yeah, George Hill was, Just to watch him play, get to be courtside and watch that, you're just going, this guy's different.
Yep. Yes.
His length, and I know that a lot of people, you see length on TV, but when you see how long his arms were in person, it was just unreal. I'm going, they're almost down to his ankles, it seemed like, how long his arms were. He was a really good defensive player, really good athletic guy. I mean, obviously, he's in the NBA now and successful in the NBA as well. You know, Nate Walters didn't really fare well there. Not really.
Not great. He had a decent game his senior year, but yeah, he didn't do a ton.
You know, and so watching him there wasn't so outstanding. But, you know, overall, the team, just watching it was good to watch the BSA. But to me, that South Dakota State game where NDCU, it just felt like, much probably like to you, Brad, that Kansas State game, the crowd had some involvement. And you could actually tell, boy, the BSA has an opportunity to be a really hostile environment. If it so chooses to be. I hope that with the Shack, the crowd involvement, and especially the student section, gets ramped up. Because that, to me, is a huge advantage when it comes to college basketball. You go to Brookings, and I always use Brookings as kind of like the place, but you go to Frost Arena, and I strongly encourage you to go to a game at Frost Arena. They're good. I mean, they're right there. They're right behind the media bench, and it's right there. They're right there. Yes. They're right on top of you, right behind the coaches' benches, in fact, the team benches
and
as
you
well.
Can't, if you don't have your headphones on, you can't hear yourself think.
No.
And that's great. Fun atmosphere down there.
It really is. So, and you're probably going to expect some of that in Sioux Falls for South Dakota State.
Sure.
It's essentially a home game. It's only an hour drive for Brookings people, and they show up, especially for the women's games.
Yep.
I mean, they expect that team to be in the finals, and when they do reach the finals, there'll be 5,000 Jackrabbit fans in that arena, and it's unbelievable. They do it right, and they do a good job. All right, it's enough NDSU talk.
Yeah.
Hopefully and most likely we will get to the Summit League tournament.
Next week
or later this week, whatever. So let's get to
regional.
Twin Spring Training opened up.
Yeah.
I was down there.
Training, you were there.
I was there.
Let's get the, let's see.
Sanoa first out of the way. We can talk about that right away. And the arm injury, he's going to have Tommy John surgery. The biggest concern you have is, well, how's he going to come back from it? In this day and age, and he's not a pitcher either, your biggest concern with him is he going to be able to hit with the same amount of power as he was before the injury? That's your biggest concern. That's all you're concerned about.
There's a couple of concerns. That's one.
Well, they're not looking at him projected-wise essentially to be a third baseman. He's almost too big, too much of a lumber to be a third baseman in the future. So
where are you going to play him?
DH. If you can hit like that, you DH him all day. Doesn't matter. Or if you have to.
But I mean, if you're bringing up a guy though,
you'd like him to start at third base.
Unless he's David Ortiz, bringing up a guy without a position is just not ideal.
You want him to be a third baseman, obviously, and you want him to be able to hit. They look at him as a Miguel Cabrera. That's how they envision him. And Miguel Cabrera, not exactly the best third baseman defensively there is, but the guy can hit 350 with 35 bombs. He's
there's a lot of problems with saying, we're looking at him to be Miguel Cabrera. There's a lot of problems. I understand what you're saying.
He's that kind of potential. That's how you project him at the highest end.
Yeah.
You understand where I'm coming from at the highest end. He's not going to be this guy who's going to be a Gold Glover.
No.
He's not. But you expect him to hit 35 homers, 100 RBIs. That's where he projects to be. That's where you want him to be if you're in the Twins. The Tommy John surgery has become so routine lately that you see pitchers bounce back from it very successfully.
Yeah.
He's a third baseman. He's an infielder. You're not going to hopefully see much of a downgrade. What this does now is that Twins fans, Twins front office, Twins executives, everybody in Twins organization was looking at him going, all right, Trevor Plouffe, you have one of two options. Do real well, and you're no longer our third baseman. Do real horrible, and you're no longer our third baseman.
Yeah, pretty much.
Trevor Plouffe was gone no matter what.
Yes.
And what the hope was is that Plouffe, best case scenario, Plouffe goes out, hits 280, pulls 15 balls, 12 balls over the left field fence at Target Field, whatever, by June, July. Teams that really need him are going,
come get a third baseman.
Yep. He's free. We'll give him to you for a couple pitching prospects, whatever. There you go. Now Snow moves in. Worst case scenario is Plouffe hits 220, strikes out a ton, has six homers, is driven in 20 RBIs, just can't do a thing. And then you go, all right, let's bring up Snow, who's just raking in Double A or Triple A, where he might have started Rochester. That doesn't happen now. And now everything gets pushed back a year, if not further. So instead of middle of the season, late season 2014, you're looking at late season 2015, maybe 2016, beginning of the season. That stinks because
Twins fans are being sold hope.
Yes.
And when your second best prospect goes down and the prospect who was next up on the docket to come up and hit the big leagues goes down, it gets tougher to sell hope.
Yes. And you want to be able to sell that because what else is there for the Twins? Being around spring training, the optimism is in full force, you know, because it's day one. You don't know. Yep. Everything could change. Everybody's happy. But
it's because they're playing 36 holes of golf a day.
Yeah, essentially. Well, that's kind of the cool thing. You'd wake up. We'd leave the hotel. Mike McFeely and I would leave the hotel at 7, get to the park about 7:30, and they're done everything about 12:31.
Yep.
You know, somewhere around that time. And then it's the rest of the day to kind of do whatever, play golf or work out or whatever you had to do for them. They've signed some pitchers, and this pitching staff is full of names that you've heard, but you don't think of dominating. Mike Pelfrey, Kevin Correa, Ricky Nolasco.
Phil Hughes.
And Phil Hughes. Those are your four guys that are going to make the starting rotation most likely right out of spring training. A lot of guys fighting for the fifth. There's a lot of starting pitchers that you've heard of at the major league level for the Twins. Kyle Gibson, Vance Worley, Sam Deduno, Scott Diamond. Okay. Who's going to be our fifth starter? And reality is that when you have all these pitchers in camp and you really don't know what your set rotation is, that's bad because that means you've had a lot of missteps, you've had a lot of misfires, and you're just really hoping somebody can step it up. Meanwhile, guys like Trevor May and Alex Meyer, two prospects you traded for, are also in camp as well. So they're making all the other veterans going, all right, maybe my job isn't that safe. But the pitching rotation essentially is going to be what makes or breaks the Twins this year because if the pitching rotation with all the guys they've signed, if those four guys come out and they throw six innings a game, giving up 3 to 4 runs, 6 to 7 innings a game on a consistent basis, the Twins, like any other team in the major leagues, it's not just Twins specific, but the Twins bullpen is good enough to go, all right, we can work with that. So if you take care of the starting pitching, you get into the bullpen because the bullpen was really good last year with Casey Fien.
Still not 100% sure how they're going to score 4 runs a
Glenn
game.
Glenn Perkins. And there lies the problem.
Yes.
Is you can do all those things right.
Yeah. Over, under. What's our over, under?
You want to do this now?
I want to at least settle on a number. I don't know that we need to pick, but I think we need to at least discuss what the number is.
Maybe our baseball stuff should open up our spring ongoing wager.
Stay tuned for our spring training or opening day spectacular.
Yes, exactly.
Where we pick the Twins over, under.
Speaking of, we're going to have
the Pinto and White Shadow
show. Speaking of, and we'll get to it later, but we're going to have to do a bracket on this show when that comes out. I think that's a given.
Yeah.
That's a given. Yeah. Anyways, over, under, what are you thinking?
Is it even 70? I don't think it's 70.
Yeah. Wins?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they get to 70.
Think they get 70?
Yeah. I think they can get to 70 and 92. I think they can do better than that. It's only a 4-game improvement, I think, on last year. I think they lost 96 or 95 games, something like that. I think they do.
Yeah.
I think this team, pitching-wise, is going to be a little bit better. But the biggest problem is that you just offensively, you're just going, well, where is it going to come from? I mean, Joe Mauer is going to hit third and play first base, and then what? You know, you don't have really any power. Willingham's over the hill.
Kubel
is, you're hoping. Boy, you're hoping. Pedro Florimond can play all the defense in the world, can't hit worth a lick.
Dozier.
Brian Dozier had a good second half of the season, really could show, but he's still not going to hit 300. Yeah,
no.
Nope.
Aaron Hicks, we don't know.
Aaron Hicks, you're just hoping that he does presses Alex Presley to make the team out of spring training.
Yeah.
This team offensively is bad. And that's the other part that goes into Sano because you're looking, but at least we have Sano.
Give somebody
at least we have Sano. You don't have Sano anymore, so you have to deal with whatever they throw out there. They're not signing power hitters because, frankly, they're looking at their offense going, and we've got some guys that could come up. There's a guy down there, Danny Santana, who's a shortstop infield prospect. They're going, he's a better hitter than Florimond. He's a better hitter than Dozier, and I think the defense can get to those points. You know, Dozier played pretty good second. Florimond has a glove at short, but they're saying this guy, if he can put the glove together, he's our guy, you know. that's what they're hoping.
I mean, you know, something like that. Spring training. All the delusions of spring training.
Oh, yeah, because you're zero
and
zero.
He can only do this, and he can only do this. And
we got to get him to there. The other guy who actually was making a pretty big impact in spring training is Kenis Vargas. 6'7", 273 pounds. So,
are you sure he's not a pro wrestler?
Oh, man, guy was massive. So we're during kind of the day, you'd shoot video or you do interviews or whatever. And then you'd go up in the press box at Hammond Stadium where the Twins play. And every once in a while, they'd switch out groups and they'd switch out pitchers. And the group that kind of stayed together was Eduardo Escobar, who was a utility infielder for the Twins. He was most of the year last year. Miguel Sano, and then this Kenis Vargas. Well, Sano and Vargas would put on a show in Hammond Stadium. They would hit it out of the stadium. And one of the funnier parts is that Hammond Stadium was getting some renovations done to it. They have a 360 boardwalk in the outfield, and there's a lot of construction workers working out there daily trying to get this thing ready for the first spring training game.
Maybe trying to nail the construction workers.
Oh, the construction workers would be ducking balls left and right. Well, final day that we're there, Wednesday, Escobar, Sano, Vargas are back in, and they're just launching them, hitting the batter's eye, whatever. Well, Eduardo Escobar's ripping doubles. He's not expected to hit homers. He's a short guy infielder. He gets a hold of one and launches it to left. And all of a sudden, you hear thud. Ah! And just a line of curse words come rolling out of this construction worker's mouth. He threw down whatever he's working on, and he's limping back and forth because Escobar just nailed him in the leg. And everybody stopped and was like, What just happened there? You know, yeah. That was kind of the fun thing from spring training.
Here's what's going to happen with our baseball talk about the Twins is you're going to be really excited, and I'm going to be a guy who was a big Twins fan, and I'm probably now a lukewarm Twins fan. I mean, I don't watch every game. I watch very few games, and I've kind of become a fair weather Twins fan. I'm going to be a giant bucket of cold water throughout the entire season.
I would like to care by May. Yeah. I would love to still care about the Twins by May, and not just turn them on because it's the Twins in June, and I have nothing else to watch.
This reminds me of the mid to late '90s Twins.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we're going to look back at, remember when they had Trevor Plouffe at third? You know, when they had Michael Restovich and Scott Stachowiak and...
Give me a Scott Mears, or a Pat Mears. Pat Mears at short, and
yep.
Ron Coomer was
Alex
the best
Cole,
player on the team, and...
Rich Becker.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
All these guys, hey, they just... Chip Hale was like the guy out there. Oh, man. It's, yeah, we can go through a lot of names. This Twins team is not going to win a lot of games this year, and your best hope is that they've signed these pitchers, and... They go out and they have a heck of a year, and then the offense is still just going to stink. The offense to me projects as like
30th or 29th. We need a cold water drop. I don't know what it is, but we need a drop that somehow is cold water.
Yeah, they're just not going to be good. No. So it was a fun time.
I'm glad you had fun.
It was a fun time, and the best thing I can take from it is as a fan, go to spring training because there's really not going to be a better experience for you if you have a family go because. Twins players are accessible and they're relaxed. They're willing to come up and sign autographs and talk to you a little bit and become friendly with you. A little bit more pressure when the stage is turned up at Major League Baseball, Target Field, wherever they may be. When it's just Hammond Stadium and you're from Brad to me and you can't see us, but Brad to me away from a player.
That's neat.
It is neat. Yeah. It's really a neat experience. So I'd say go there. Oh, and people are wondering about Byron Buxton. Fast, extremely humble. I'll give you an example. Asked Miguel Sano what his expectations were for the season. He hoped to hit 300, 35 homers, 100 RBIs, get a gold glove. Byron Buxton, when asked what he thought he'd do, he said he just kind of hoped to make somewhat of an impression. Asked, what do you think you can make the club out of spring training? It was a long pause. I don't know about that. Number one prospect in all of baseball, according to a lot of outlets, this kid doesn't really see himself in that light. He just sees himself as being someone who can help out the organization. Not saying he doesn't have confidence, but he's humble. He might be the next superstar, not only in Twins territory, but in all baseball. If he can put it all together, obviously. A lot of hope. All right, let's move on to
National.
Real quick before we dive into National, LeBron James just put up 61 tonight.
Well, that is National. 61?
Yeah.
How dumb is it that the NBA makes him change a mask?
I loved that mask.
I love the black mask. Why do you have to change it?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Whatever. NBA.
61.
Yeah.
That's many points.
That's 61 points.
That's
yeah.
many.
Yeah, that's...
By the way, we had this conversation a while back. Just
what in the world is up?
That's, yeah. Okay. LeBron James.
Thanks.
Is
61, yeah. It's the only argument I need. Don't we have that full bit on there?
No, I don't yeah. actually. Why LeBron James? We should have the argument why Brett Winkleman might not make my team over Trayvon
yeah,
Wright.
There we go.
It's the only
like
argument
that.
I need.
I like that. Gosh, I just lost it. Oh, we were talking about basketball nicknames. The Slim
yes.
Reaper is the best nickname in a long time.
It's
for
very
Kevin
good.
Durant, and I'm really disappointed that he doesn't like it.
Probably because he likes himself as Durantula, maybe.
No,
I don't know.
He didn't like Durantula. He tried to put it out there that just call me the Servant. That's what I want my nickname to be, the Servant.
Servant? Like religiously?
I don't know. He said, I want to be the Servant. He's the Slim Reaper, and it's awesome.
Okay. Unless you've got some very good religious, you know, if you could back me up with some quotes from the Bible and do all that stuff and why the servant would make sense.
Number one, it's out already because you tried to give yourself a nickname. I'm
well,
sorry. It's done.
Well, you're Kevin Durant. I think you can.
No. No. There's been one person that's been able to get away with that, and that was Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq was able to get away with that a little bit. But that's it. Everyone else, no. Maybe Muhammad Ali. I think he gave himself a couple back in the day. That's it. Kevin Durant, sorry. No.
Okay.
He is the Slim Reaper.
All right.
Okay. Sorry. No. I'm going to get off my soapbox.
No, that's okay. You just went nickname soapbox opera.
I mean,
it's fine. All right. So we've got NBA. There wasn't really much to talk about in the NBA. We'll skip that.
Well, yeah, we did. Tanking.
Oh, yes. Tanking.
Yes.
What do you think about? What are your thoughts?
I mean, again, we just talked about with the Twins selling hope, and that's the way you sell hope, is by saying, you know what, yeah, we're bad this year, but there's 3, 4, 5 players that can change a franchise in this year's draft. Stick with us. You want to keep those season tickets, you want to get as close to seats as you possibly can, because we're selling hope. We're going to have one of these guys. We're going to have all this cap room to be able to bring in somebody to play with them, and we're going to have a team. That's
okay.
I mean, that's the argument for it.
Okay.
As far as both the business side and the basketball side, because you don't want to be the 8 seed. You want to be really good, or you want to be really bad.
Okay.
If your aspirations are to win a title, you can't be stuck in that no man's land.
So then why not do this? Why not just make it a 4-team from each conference playoff? Because if you're looking at it being an 8-seed as the bad...
Hold on. Are we looking at ideal scenarios, or are we looking at anything that's semi-realistic?
Okay.
Because
no,
you're taking
you're
money
saying.
Out of owners' pockets, and that's just...
Okay,
yeah.
I get what you're saying. Tanking to me is bad. I'll make this short, sweet, and simple.
Okay.
Tanking is a bad thing because it lessens the product of the NBA, and it makes the average fan, maybe on the fringe fan, go, why do I want to watch a game where half the teams are trying, half the teams aren't? At least in baseball, I can assume that some of these guys are trying. At least in hockey, I assume they're trying. At least in football, I assume they're trying. But in basketball, if I'm an average fan, I'm going, why do I want to watch a team give up 134 points consistently and want to lose so they can play for next year? No, I'm done with the NBA. That's why tanking is bad.
The players, it's not the players. I mean, it's not the players. It's not even the coaches that want to lose. It's the owner and it's the general manager. So, I mean, I get it. It's the whole organization, but there's a little bit of separation there. The coaches are always going to try to win games.
Yep.
Because even if you're tanking, guess what? If you're the general manager, you know what you're going to do? You're going to fire the coach because that's going to take some of the heat off of you. It's like, oh, yep, we lost a lot of games, but we need to make some change because if we lose games even 2 years in a row, then all of a sudden it's my job. Coach, you're gone. This is your fault. Oh, I just bought myself another year because I was able to blame the coach.
Right.
So, I mean, what's the solution? I mean, that's kind of the thing. And there's been a couple things. There was a really interesting article on Grantland.
I met Jonah Carey.
Did you?
Yes. He was in the Twins spring training locker room.
That's a great sighting.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm a big Jonah Carey fan. He's a fun read. If you want, Grantland's
he's
got...
He's a Grantland.com who writes
about
baseball.
Yeah. Grantland's got 3 of the best sports beat writers out there. Not team, but sports writers out there. And Zach Lowe for the NBA. in Bill Barnwell for football and Jonah Carey for baseball. And you can even throw in Mark Titus for college basketball.
Yep.
But those first three guys, as good as there is out there at what they do.
Yeah.
But
it was on Grantland.
It was on Grantland. There was a draft pick wheel. So every year you knew what your draft pick was going to be going in, and it balanced it out. You got every pick one time in a 30-year cycle.
Okay.
And there was I won't get into the math because most importantly because, well, two reasons. You don't care, and I didn't understand it. But it somehow balanced it out to where, you know, over any given like 6-year stretch, you were guaranteed one pick in the top X amount of picks and one pick in the – and so, it balanced it out somewhat so that it would be even for all teams.
Why not just have it be every team gets the number one pick once a year instead of the whole balancing it out, and I get the math and the wheel where you're in – what I'm assuming is how you're saying is that this year we're going to be possibly in the top five.
So
we're going to have picks one through five. Doesn't matter. We could be one. We could be five years in a row. Okay, now the next 5 years we're either pick six or ten.
No, it's not like that. So in any given 6-year period, you'd have one of the top five picks. You wouldn't have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It would be like you'd have one, and then the next year you would have 23, and the next year you would have 27, and then you'd bounce back up to 11 or 12. And the math made it so that it was as equal as it could be.
Doesn't fly. Fans don't care. Too complicated. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. You got to make it simple, because with fans, it's easy because they go, worst record. All right. Even the lottery, in a sense, is a little bit kind
of worst record, most ping pong balls.
Right. A little bit. I get that. But then there's still that percent chance of, well, we had the worst record.
But at least it's easy to understand. It's easy to understand. Worst record,
in that sense.
Best chance.
In that sense, yes. But if you're going to go for me, here's an easy way. You just make it a rotation. All right. We're going to draw names out of a hat. And this year, this is the first year of 30 because we have 30 teams. Okay, so Dallas Mavericks, you're our number one pick.
Okay.
And then from then on, everybody that gets into that pick, and then you just rotate up. So whoever was 30 last year becomes the number one the next year. One goes to two, two to three, and so on and so forth.
See, but the problem with that is if you have a bad – if you have a team that has an aging superstar or that, you know, that retires, and you happen to be on that 20 line – you've got 10 years of having a crappy draft pick.
Not as well, like 10 years of a crappy draft pick, true, but you also have the opportunity to go, okay, from a general manager standpoint, we have to figure out some way that doesn't eliminate trading, that doesn't eliminate free agents.
But it hurts a lot, though, because as the number one pick of, you know, if you're trying to trade and you're down assets.
But this also benefits a team. Say it was the Los Angeles Clippers who had the number one pick or the number five pick, let's say, for instance. And they're looking at their team going, we're setting all these positions. All right, here's what we can do. We can really – we'd rather have this guy instead of the number five pick. They have the 15 pick. Let's kind of figure something out
but
where we can get to that
spot. When do top five picks ever get traded in the NBA? It's rare.
Well, it is rare because the teams need those top five picks. I'm talking about maybe when a team doesn't.
But here's the thing. But the problem with that is you can add a player. At that point, I can add a top five talent, and I've got him on the books for 3 or 4 years for very little money. I mean, the five pick
team.
Is incredibly – yeah, to a good team, and that's incredibly valuable.
Well, what's wrong with that? By the way, the Pistons a year, I think they won.
What I'm saying is what's wrong with it is the fact that if you are a down team, I can't even sell hope for 10 years.
No, you can if you figure out a way. You have to be able to use what you're given. It makes a GM, instead of going, let's just unload, and – hey, let's hope for that top five pick. Instead of doing that, you got to go, okay, we're in a situation right now where we're not good, but we can get better if we do this, this, and this. It makes GMs better.
Okay,
it makes coaches better.
Okay, it's just that simple? Then why doesn't every team do it?
It's not that simple.
Okay.
Obviously, but it makes it more – it makes it fairer in this –
no,
it
makes
it fairer.
What makes it fairer is the wheel. The wheel makes it fair because it bounces around. If you're telling me,
yes,
I'm going to have 10 years of a top 10 pick and then 10 years of not picking in the top 10 – There's no equity in that. The wheel at least gives you a couple of different opportunities in a span to have, okay, I'm going to have a high pick, but then I'm going to have a couple low picks, and it moves it around.
But here's the problem that I have with the wheel is that in the NBA, you're not just trying to become this – you have to understand fans, you're trying to sell it to fans too.
Okay, but so you're trying to sell to fans that your GM is going to make good decisions by your plan.
Interest in the NBA in general, interest in the NBA draft in general, not just because you're looking at an overall product with the NBA. It's not just about individual teams. They deal with what they're doing on an individual basis. But if I'm whoever the GM is now, not the GM, but the commish, it's not Stern.
Adam Silver.
If I'm Adam Silver, I'm going, how do I generate overall interest for the NBA draft in a sense that I need to make it a better product, and I not only need to sell the draft to the fans, but I need to sell it to GMs, and I need to sell it to fan bases. I think that the wheel is confusing. I know that's a very slim argument to have.
I need to reread it, confusing just because you don't understand it doesn't mean it's less fair. It's way more fair than the system.
Well, it's not so much about fair. I get your fair standpoint. That makes sense. But you have to understand when you look at
I hate that phrase when you use that, by the way.
What?
You have to understand. You keep trying to tell me that I'm a moron, basically. It's my least favorite phrase
it's
that
a crutch
you use.
Phrase. All right.
I hate it.
All right.
Okay.
Look at it from this standpoint.
Okay.
It's a different way to
say
it.
I like that. That's better.
That if I, like I said, you have to go, fans, this is easy to understand. Not all fans are idiots. Some fans are. And you need to incorporate all this. When a team like, I don't know how to put it. I can't think of somebody off the top of my head. Let me finish this statement.
Okay.
But a team unloads all these players because they're building up for
Philadelphia
because they're building up maybe cap space for certain things. They can sign a big player that has free agency. If you look at the average fan and go, all right, here's what we're doing. We're getting this guy off the books, getting this guy off the books, getting this guy off the books, and getting this guy off the books because our cap space is not going to hit the luxury tax at this point and the arbitration. And then you throw out a bunch of words at them. They're just going to look at you and go, why'd you trade our best player? That's all they think.
Okay, but that's fine. But the system that you're proposing is giving them is giving them the opportunity to not have that. And what you're saying is, oh, GMs just have to get creative. Well, they have to do that now, and they have the benefit of having the opportunity to have a high pick, and they still screw it up. And now you're trying to say, not only are you going to be in that same situation, but now you're going to be bad, and I'm not going to give you a high pick. I mean, how many franchise-changing players switch teams
nowadays?
One every two or three years.
Yeah, not often, but nowadays it's more likely.
Franchise-changing players:
Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James.
Okay, so
I can think of three right off the top of my head that have changed teams
per year.
That's more than there were in previous years.
Okay, that's fine, but one per year, and
in the prime of their career, mind you.
But in the system that you're saying, the system that you're saying benefits the big market teams.
Not necessarily.
Yes, it does.
How? Because they're not always going to have the best picks. They're not.
But it'll
change year to year.
No, in yours, it really doesn't, though. It changes years to years. I'm going to have a good pick for 8 years, and then I'm going to have a bad pick for 8 years. If you're the Milwaukee Bucks, LeBron James isn't walking through your door. I don't care how much cap space you have. You're not getting a guy like that in free agency. And, you know, to try to trade for him, you can't get any assets because your picks for 10 years are terrible. So you don't have any assets to try to trade these guys, to trade for these guys. So you're just, if you happen to hit a rut where Dirk Nowitzki, let's say, retires, and you're stuck in a spot where you're 20 through 30 in the draft, now you have no superstar. If you're in a location where superstar isn't going to go, you have no chance at signing one. So you're going to overpay for a guy like Josh Smith or Charlie Villanueva or somebody like that, and that's not going to help you at all. And you don't even have a high pick to either try to trade for one of those top players or to be able to actually get one in the draft. It makes those teams be bad for 10 years. And if anything has been proven over the course of the NBA, it's that you want to have interest in as many teams as possible. That's what's fun about the NBA right now, is that there's so many interesting teams. And those teams get interesting because they have assets. And from those bad teams, you're taking away assets.
But here's the problem I have with all of that, is that you talked about major markets being the benefactor of my
system. And
they're
always going to be.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what we do.
But I think it increases it there. Because if you, because you still might have a chance to get one of those top players if you're the Lakers, the Celtics, the Heat. You still might have a chance to get one of those players. If you're the Milwaukee Bucks of the world and the Minnesota Timberwolves of the world, and when Kevin Love leaves and if it's coming down to 20 through 30 on your turn in your system, you're done for a decade. And you've literally lost a decade's worth of fans who are going to be interested in you. And that's the problem. At least with the wheel, I consider myself to be a pretty educated guy, and I would have to go through and reread that the number system of it. But I trust that they've said the math works, and the smart people in the league say the math works to make this even. At least at least I don't have to look for 10 years before I'm going to have a top 2 or 3 pick. I can at least look for, okay, I'm going to have one top 6, 7, 8 pick every 6 years. Every 5 or 6 years, something like that. So I'm at least going to have a couple of picks up in there.
All right. I don't know if we solved anything, because I don't buy the wheel.
Okay. And you don't buy it because you don't understand it and scares you.
It doesn't scare me. I could understand it if I read it.
Okay.
I just don't think that... fans will get it. I think they'll look at it as dumb.
Okay.
Because they're, like you said, you don't really have a grasp of it, so maybe it's a bad example to go off of what you said. But if I'm a team, again, that goes, say I win 72 games in 1 year. That's an astronomical number. But say I win 72 games in 1 year, and then all of a sudden, because the wheel says so, I'm the number one pick. You know, that could happen. Where,
sure.
Again, but my mindset with this whole you just go year by year is you just know. You know coming in what it's going to... I get that it eliminates...
That's the same thing with the wheel, too, though. It's not like the wheel, you know every pick you're going to have for the next 30 years, same as yours.
Right.
It just evens it out rather than having... You're going to have 10 years here where you're going to have a top 10 pick, and you're going to have 10 years where you're going to have a bottom 10 pick. It just shuffles it up in a way that makes it sense. That makes sense and makes it more fair.
Again, you still run into the same problem, though, where... You could still have a team that goes really good and gets in the top five. And
okay, but the difference is in the wheel system, you have that happen 1 year. In your system, you have that for 6 years.
Well, by random choice, it could happen 5 straight years, couldn't it?
Not in the wheel. It's not a, you spin.
I feel
the
like
wheel
you should have a
year.
Sander for the wheel.
Okay,
wheel.
You don't spin the wheel every year. You just go to the next spot on it. So you go 1, 24, 27, 12. You know, it's not where it's something different every year. You know exactly what it's going to be.
Okay.
I think if you read the article, I think you'd like it more. Maybe I'm doing a poor job of explaining it. That's possible.
All right.
But I think you'd like it.
I'll have to read it. Okay. Last question as we get to this podcast, get to the end of it. I'm going to give you conference tournaments. They're starting tonight, actually, I think in the Patriot League or something. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'm going to read you off some conferences and the top teams in each conference. Or maybe I just read you off some conferences, and you can tell me maybe if you'd want to see or some of the conferences that would be fun. You've got the American East with, like, Vermont, Stony Brook.
No.
The American, that's a major conference. Louisville, Cincinnati, SMU with Larry Brown. I'd still pass on that. This one might be fun. The Atlantic 10, St. Louis, St. Joe's, UMass,
you're not
VCU.
Really going to go through all 32 conferences, are you?
Are there 32?
Yeah.
I'll pick and choose.
Okay.
The Atlantic 10.
How about we make it a little bit easier? If you could only watch one conference tournament, which one?
You know, right now, that's a good question.
Thank you.
In all honesty, I would want to go Missouri Valley.
Okay. Why?
Wichita State would be fun to watch.
Okay. Want to see them go for history, go for the...
Yeah.
Okay.
I would, right. Just to see Wichita State. And as I look at this, I'm looking at some teams overall. The MAC, the Mid-Atlantic Athletic Conference.
Okay.
MAAC.
The MAC.
MAAC, yeah. It has teams like Iona, Manhattan, Quinnipiac, Kinesis.
Quinnipiac.
All these teams are like 14 wins and above in conference play.
Okay.
That's pretty good. That's entertaining. They've all played 20 conference games. They all know each other very well. That would be kind of a fun conference. I'm going to change it to them.
Okay. I'm going to go, if you're asking me if I could only watch one conference tournament, I'm going to go boring. Give me the ACC. You throw in on top of Duke, Carolina, you're throwing in Syracuse,
Virginia.
And Virginia's been great. Top 5 team now. Yeah, it's boring. It's kind of what, but I think that it's there's a little extra spice this year with the Qs in there. Give me the ACC.
Okay, I respect that. Yeah. Heart of Basketball Land. I'd still go ACC.
I like it.
All right, we're not going to get to Tyler in Tennessee just because it's a question that doesn't really have a date specific.
Yeah,
we'll get to it at another point. It's a good conversation. Later, another podcast. Next time up, we'll probably talk more Summit League tournament. We'll get into that. A little bit more in NCAA basketball, I'm sure.
Yes.
MLB is approaching. We'll get into some of that stuff more often. Working on some things out there. Maybe
hard to believe that it's baseball season after looking outside tonight.
This thing has been going on for 9 months, by the way. If I do my math correctly, 9 or 8 months, this podcast.
Yeah, we started in
July.
Did we start in July?
Yep.
July 1st? Really?
Yeah, July 1st. I believe it was July something. It was July.
I thought you called me in July. I thought we started either late July or early. We'll have to go back. Okay. I believe you.
I remember. Okay. I believe it was July. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's it for the podcast. It's an awkward way to wrap it up.
Yeah.
It was a fun podcast. We didn't even talk Oscars. Ellen DeGeneres Wales. Love her.
She was great.
Oh,
I actually
gosh.
Watched most of the Oscars.
I did too. Watched the whole thing, in fact. So I want to thank Brad Jones, the co-host, Dale Gutterson here. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at PintoKFJO. He's
at the Bison Guy.
You can find us on Facebook. Pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com is our email address. Comment section on KFJO.com or find us on iTunes. So for Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gutterson saying thank you so much for enjoying this podcast, and we'll see you next time.